Hello, we're back here with the Double Bench Show. And this week we have Ying. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you for this great opportunity. Thank you for what you have done for US Hoople.
Oh, I appreciate it.
It's nice to
Yeah. So we're going to get right into it since you mentioned US Hoopo. You know, US Hoopo is coming up in Chicago in March. And you don't need to tell us, I guess, about your talk per se, but, and I know you're doing like 500 things, but can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing and kind of like what the most exciting thing that you think is going on with your work?
Yeah, so I'll just give you a kind of, lots of exciting things going on in the lab, just give you a kind of an overview of what we have focused on in our lab. So our lab is highly interdisciplinary. Our goal is to bridge the chemistry together with biology and the medicine. So I have chemistry students developing cool technologies in proteomics and metabolomics. We have something really exciting, you know, in terms of top-down proteomics of single skeletal muscle cells. And my student, Jake, detected over like 200 kilodalton myosin, which is large proteins from a single muscle cell, which is very exciting. And we also have, developed nanoproteomics technologies. Currently, we can enrich proteins from blood and tissues. So something very exciting to be said in the US Hoopo is actually my student, Emily Chapman, just got a talk to talk about her work and the, you know, endogenous troponin complex that we enriched using functionalized nanoparticle. And, then she can characterize the protein complex, the whole protein troponin complexes from the human heart tissues. And that's something that, you know, probably will be going on in the US Hoopo, some really cool technology that we have in the lab. So overall, I think also we have biology students applying the cutting edge technologies freshly from the oven to address biological questions, such as apply the top-down proteomics to heart disease. And we have done this for quite a while. So we also have MD, PhD students help us connecting the basic research from the clinic. So it has been a lot of fun. So we've been mainly working on heart disease in the lab, but recently we also have expanded to other fields, especially in the regenerative medicine and the cancer. So I'm very excited that we could do both chemistry and the biology and the medicine in the same lab. And this is part of my unusual career path. You know, unlike some other professors, you know, I did not really have postdoc experience. So I went to pharma industry, mostly in pharmaceutical companies right after graduate school. So I worked in drug discovery and development. So where I got to really work side by side with biologists and MDs, PharmDs, computational biologists, or computational scientists, pharmacists. So I really enjoyed that experience because that's some really fun then to find out, we're not in the silos. So as you know, typically, chemists work in the chemistry labs, chemistry department, biologists work in the biologist department, and MDs, in their own silos. So I feel like it's probably not the best way for us to train the next generation scientist, because the real world, it's a team. It's a team effort. It's in the pharmaceutical companies or even in the instrument companies, everybody, the team working together. So I very much like to highlight this team spirit in the lab and the people from all disciplines welcoming our lab. We even have a computer scientist group, right? We work on the top-down proteomic software, which is called Mesh. We just recently have developed a Mesh native that can really analyze, very complex native mass spectrometry, the native proteomics spectrum. So I have worked closely with our computer scientist, Sean McKevin. He's really awesome. So, I just really love the interdisciplinary research. It's fun.
I have like 100 questions, but the first one has got to be like, how big is your group? Because there are so many papers. I mean, it is just.
Thank you.
A lot of paper.
It's not that big. You know, I had like a dozen students, you know, 10 or 12 students. And I usually have a one or two postdocs. This time I'm lucky. I have three outstanding postdoc fellows, and they are just awesome. Boris is a Marie Curie fellow. From Germany. So he brought a treat from German. So he helped our lab clean and organized, as you know. So I also have a great postdoc, Melissa Pagandi. She was originally trained by Stephanie Klockner. She graduated from UIC. So she brought the multi-omics into our lab. So she's doing really exciting work in multi-omics. Also have another postdoc from China, Zhang Gao. You know, so I have many students. I don't know whether I have time to highlight a few of them. I have four students graduating next year. My student, Jake Melby, I already talked to you about his really exciting top-down proteomics of single muscle cells. He's graduating next year. My student, Elizabeth Bain, she has done beautiful work on multi-omics. So she gave a few talks already in ASMS. And also, I think, you know, she's also graduating next year. She is doing awesome work. I have a student, Eli Larson, is doing wonderful work and collaborating with pharma, so on the antibody drug conjugate. So my another student, David Roberts, he's a exceptional student. He not only has a chemistry, chemistry training, he also is a material chemist. So he leading our nanoproteomics team. He has developed the functionalized nanoparticles to enrich troponins, and he's doing some also really cool stuff in the glycoproteomics.
Okay, so I think that this is a lot of evidence that your approach is working, because if you had said that you had 40 students, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Mm-hmm. No, I try to keep a relatively small or medium sized lab so I could have attention to all students. I really enjoy mentoring students and also postdocs.
And they're really, you know, and again, just to, as a person who's for a few, I've never met you until today, but I've met your students, right? Like you had mentioned David, right? Like he gave this talk last year. Yeah. And like some of your other students, like they're all so good.
Yeah.
You know, we're over here like scrounging to find, you know, we talk about like, oh man, I wish I could have like, you know, those students. And like, you just have this, you mentioned all these people that in any environment are like amazing. And you've just got all of them, which I think speaks probably, you know, that's to you, right? I mean, you know, it's got to come down from the top, and just it's really impressive. I mean, I think you obviously have some sort of a culture that's working very well, you know, and it's just, it's very impressive to hear about. So,
yeah, I'm very proud of my students. You know, they're awesome. So they're very talented. So as you know, UW-Madison, we got really great students in here. And I had fun mentoring students because they come to you almost like a blank paper, right? So you can do anything you like, pretty much. You know, I find it's like they're changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and my students, I always said mature quickly. And so I spend a lot of time helping them. I think I have, for example, my students, current my third-year students, Kevin Buck and Emily Chapman. You know, I work very closely with Kevin. I was very impressed by Kevin, too. So he developed our exosome, you know, proteomics project. He developed a one-pod exosome proteomics using a surfactant called azo that was developed by my former student, Kyle Brown. Kyle is another awesome student that I have. So, you know, Kyle spent 4 years and developed this photocleavable surfactant called azo, right? So, you know, it's really cool. And it takes a lot of time in the development, but it's really powerful in both top-down and bottom-up proteomics. So Kayo published his paper in Nature Methods and the top-down, the use of azole for top-down proteomics. He was able to really analyze the membrane proteome. And he also showed it really works well for bottom-up proteomics. So working together with Kayo, my third-year graduate student, Kevin Book, and applied the azole to exosome proteomics. So he published this one-part proteomics for exosome proteomics. It was very well received. I think I just keep, it's like my, they are my, like, my kids. I can't be more proud of them. So I keep talking about this.
And it shows.
And see how much I love them. Yeah.
And yeah. Sorry, one more, because you've like drawn us this picture or painted a picture of your lab. Did you, are there fellows? Because you're mentioning MD PhDs and you're obviously affiliated with medical. Do you have fellows in your lab as well?
I have more of MD students. So what happens is these MD students come to my lab for summer research. So at UW Madison, we have a great program called Shapiro program that giving students an opportunity to embrace research in their clinical practice. So that's what's in their first year. So the end of their first year to come to our group. And so they integrated with our group really well. So these students, so usually they go back to their MD after the research experience, but they love the basic research so much. So they, you know, continue staying with us for their entire 4 years in the lab. Yes. I currently have an MD student, Scott Price. He, you know, really helped us to find the medical information. As you guys know, we work on heart diseases, right? So we have a large human cohort. So we collaborate with clinicians, with cardiac surgeons. And we have also, I also have wonderful collaboration with a cardiologist and cardiac surgeon. So, but you know, we don't really have access to PHI patient information. But these MD students have the access, so they can help us to collect those clinical information so we can integrate with the proteomics information. So in the big picture of cardiac systems biology.
Yeah, and that's always the goal, right? Any of us doing the medical stuff, it's how do we get this back?
Right.
This is a little bit of a change of pace, but this is always, it comes up all the time. But
yeah.
What is it about Madison that so much proteomics and so much mass spec is there? You know, like I'm in Baltimore, right? And our city's 5 times larger than yours, and DC's right there. There are more proteomics researchers in Madison. And do you have a, why is that? Is it the school just supportive?
It's the water.
It's an interesting point. I think it just, you know, of course, I should say it started with Lloyd Smith. You know, our senior colleague Lloyd, he's really encouraging and supportive. And I think he hired Josh to Madison. And also prior to that, Lingjun Li, you know, was in Madison already. So that UW-Madison is a big school. So Lingjun is a pharmacy. And Josh originally was hired in Department of Chemistry. And actually, my story is different from them. I come originally because my husband was a faculty member here. So as you know, I mean, just be honest, at the beginning, I was not really interested in academia. So thanks very much to Jenny Van Eyck, Pei-Pei Ping, you know, Cassie Costello, who really serve as my mentors, external mentors and advocate, who pushed me into the academia, really. So also very much like to thank all the friends in USA HUPO. They really have been encouraging. So I become a professor here. I mean, I can talk to you more about that. So then regarding our community, we have a great proteomics community. I mean, everyone work with each other. We have very collaborative environment. Each lab is doing great. So all of us are also faculty in chemistry, although we have a different other departments. Like I'm also in the cell and regenerative medicine. Lingjun is in pharmacy, Josh is biomolecular chemistry, and Lloyd is in chemistry. But we all together are chemistry faculty members. So we work together very well. It's a collegial environment here. And our students certainly enjoy this, you know, strong proteomics community. we always could work together. So all the faculty members work together to recruit students. So that helps us get the best students in proteomics. And because we have so many labs doing proteomics, and the students get to choose, you know, they have three rotations, so they can choose a lab they like, and the other labs, you know, they do not end up joining. You can find them as a committee members. So we really benefit from such a strong proteomics community.
And yeah, and it shows, right?
Yeah. It's have funny fun, to think have of fun that. Together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've heard people at NIH that have come in to interview, and someone will say, oh, they're from Madison, right? And so you know? That's the, you know, that's a vote for, you know, for somebody's skill set.
Yeah,
because so it's intimidating from the outside. And
right.
It's going to work in isolation. Like,
yeah, no, it's a great, you know, you have a community of the strong proteomics scientists.
Yeah.
And you also, I mean, we need to get into this part next, but I think it's just, you mentioned your little advisory board of like Jenny et al. And I'm like, it's like naming, like my advisor was Beethoven to like learn these, you know, you've just got, you're mentioning these people that are just amazing and they brought you up and now you're doing that same thing. That's just, so yeah. Do you mind if we shift gears a little bit and, you know, you don't have to go back to like, you were 6 years old and you saw a butterfly and you decided to be a biologist. But like you kind of said, you showed up in Madison not doing proteomics or not being a professor. How did you get there then? Right? Like how did, what had to happen to make you now this formidable thing in Madison? How did it work? You can go back as far as you want.
Yeah, I want to go back to my graduate school.
Someone talk about their grandfather. We can do it.
Well, I got my bachelor degree from Peking University. And that time, you know, everyone's coming to really U.S. for graduate school. So I think I was really lucky to get to know Professor McLafferty. And it was an interesting story. I actually was admitted in Cornell University as a organic chemistry student. So believe it or not. So I was going to join organic chemistry lab. I did organic synthesis for quite some time and also rotated a polymer chemistry lab. So all of a sudden I realized, oh, actually when I was passing through this office and has a Fred McLafferty name on that, I said, well, to be honest, because that time we all learned McLafferty rearrangement. So I was not sure, you know, Fred is still really active in research because I know he was quite old at that time. And so I, as soon as I, you know, kind of get into his lab and I met Dave Holm. And that time, Roman Zubayi was still there. So Dave now is a thermal manager for software. And of course, everybody knows Roman, right? He's the pioneer ECD and a professor in Sweden. So Dave introduced me the mass spectrometry. And I still remember the time, you know, Roman has this magic smile on his face. And that makes me feel so welcome in the lab. And felt like mass spectrometry, wow, it's so incredibly and so capable for analyzing proteins. So from small molecule kind of background, because I organic synthesis to the large molecule proteins, I was just so fascinated about this protein world. And then got into their mass spec room. And, you know, we have a super big magnet at that time. And I still remember this fortune cookie, kind of a, you know, you get those things from fortune cookie and someone pasted there called you have a magnetic personality. So I feel really active to my lab. So I really want to work for Fred. But that time, Fred was a little hesitant to take students on his own because he was, I think, 70s, you know, late 70s at that point. So when I was talking to Professor Tate Begley, who is a bioorganic chemist, I talked to him, said, I really like mass spectrometry. Now I this kind of like eye-opening experience to me. I find that like mass spectrometry can study proteins and tag study enzymology. And Tag said, oh yeah, you know, I really want to continue this collaboration with Fred because we have such a great student, Neil Kelleher. So Neil you know, did such a great work. So Ted convinced Fred to take me as a joint student and then start my, you know, really the career. And I have so much fun working with dual mentors. It was a big shoe to step in, you know, you know that, but I was able to survive, I should say. And Fred, as some of you know, that he has a really very high standard. So, but I'm very thankful to Fred for his high standard training, and it works well. And Fred gave me so much attention, and he spent a lot of time mentoring me. I still remember the time he was like teaching me how to interpret mass spectrometry using the rulers. So it's like the old days, we printed out the paper out, you know, he's for his age, right? So he has seen mass spectrometry kind of developing from the very beginning. He was a pioneer in GC-MS and, you know, established the top-down proteomics. So I think I just learned so much from both Fred and also Ted on the enzymology and kind of a more of a protein chemistry. Because with like dual training, that allows me to establish my lab without a postdoc experience. I'm incredibly grateful to my both mentors in PhD. And after that, you know, I at the beginning, as I told you, I did not want to be a professor, right? So my goal was to work in industry and focus my family life. I want two children, you know. When I was a graduate student, I got married to my college classmate. So I want to have children. And so I thought it was difficult to have a dual career because my husband is also a professor here. And so, but with a lot of encouragement from Jenny Van Eyck, from Kathy Costello, from Pei-Pei Ping, and again, many others in the community, even my good friend, Hannah, and Judith a lot of times, hey, you should go to academia. And Roman too, you know, Roman, and, you know, really encouraged me. He said, why stay in industry? Go to academia. So I asked Roman, what's for? He said, oh, for the visibility. So at that time, I did not understand, but now I guess understood. So I'm just really grateful to all my mentors, so who helped me develop as a scientist, independent scientist. So that's why I want to pay forward. I enjoy, you know, mentoring students from my lab and also try to help other, you know, kind of trainees, you know, young scientists to develop their career.
So I love this story, right? I mean, it's like you're just kind of bumping into like Fred McLafferty. Can you just for me, because I was like in the story, what time was that? Because I'm horrible at dates. So like what, and I have a follow-up question. So like when were you at Cornell?
Oh, I was in Cornell 1998 to 2002.
And what, so you couldn't, so sometimes I feel like the podcast people can't see you. You talking about seeing this mass spec, the glow. Like I felt the excitement. Like you walk in and you see this mass spec. So what was the mass spec? Like what was that mass spec that like kind of blew your brain and you're like, oh my God, I can do anything.
Oh, the mass spec is giant. It's a silver connect, you know, magnetic, right?
So it was a sector device. So it was a magnetic sector?
Yeah. Okay. No, it's FTICR.
FTICR. Okay, sorry.
I should say that. And that started my, beautiful relationship with FTICR. So I cannot love my life without FTICR. I still have the Bruker 12 Tesla FTICR. We got great data. So originally I had, you know, the thermal LTQFT. I'm, you know, happy to say we got the most impressive data from the FTICR. It's a beautiful, when you see the isotopically resolved peaks, it is so beautiful. You know, it's much better than you see the spikes for peptides, right? Just centralized. We always collect in the profile mode. I always enjoy what you call it, the raw beauty of the of the spectrum. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. And then one more. So, okay. So you're like late 90s, your husband gets a job in Madison, you come there and you wanted to have these kids, which a funny side story. I have an old boss who's incredibly successful and he was a dancer and realized he wanted to have a big family. He's like, well, I guess I should be a physician. Like, so there's these religion, there's choices that we all have made. So you have a family, and then you're still talking to, like, you just know Jenny Van Eyck, you know these people, and they're like, hey, you need to go back to academia. Like, can you, like, how did that work? Did they just knew that you were sitting there on the sidelines and they're like, we got to get her in. Like how did that work? Because I love it. I love that support.
Yeah. So that was kind of a very unusual opportunity. So when I was in Madison, I cannot just only have kids, right? So I still have to continue. I do still want to work. So I was working in a company called PBD. I worked in Wyeth when I was in Boston, when my husband was postdoc in Harvard. So I think when I come to Madison, really, there's no good big pharma in here. So I worked in PBD and I got really bored, I have to say, in the life in there that pushed me back to academia. So I should thank Lloyd for the, you know, introduction to Professor, you know, Rick Moss, who is a cardiovascular researcher at that point. So, and also Jeff Walker, who is another cardiovascular researcher. So they are starting this human proteomics program and hired me to start this program. So I'm the kind of the funding director of the human proteomics program. So I was a non-tenure track. So I'm kind of more of a facility manager, non-tenure track. But I really enjoy research. So I met Jenny, I think it was in a cardiovascular conference. So I talked to her and so you guys know Jenny. So she's extremely supportive to young scientists and especially women scientists. And she learned my story and said, oh, you know, you really should, Jenny is very frank and direct. So you're wasting your talents in industry. I mean, or as a facility manager, you should really go and start your own career and independent career. And she's very, you know, how to say that, direct and encouraging. I think Jenny really, really helped many women scientists. So, and that time I started to think about that. And of course, as you know, I have my two advisors, Fred and Peg, being very supportive, and Pepe Ping, who's another cardiovascular proteomics leader, and Kathy Costello. So I'm very proud of the cardiovascular proteomics community because we have so many women leaders.
They're so good.
A warm community and welcoming. And of course, you guys also know Rebecca Gondry, right? Mary Lindsay, Maggie Lim, Edward Lau. So excellent cardiovascular proteomics researchers. And thanks to Jenny Pepe. And of course, Kathy, for establishing such a great cardiovascular community in proteomics.
So what was the transition like? And I'm asking you selfishly because I did the industry route. Yeah. So now I'm non-tenure track. It seems like I will never be converted to tenure track. So how did that happen?
It was quite difficult. So I think once I started to think about I want to have a tenure track job, so I applied for grants. I was lucky. I got the AHA grant on my first shot, the AHA SDG grant. So then I tried to apply for R1. So, and I was, again, extremely lucky that I got my R1 as assistant scientist, which was like equivalent to assistant research professor and a facility manager. And again, you know, Cardiovascular Society really provides tons of support to me. I'm very fortunate, you know, to have support from so many communities, mass spectrometry community, HPLC community, cardiovascular community, proteomics, you know, US HUPO. You know, there's so many friends. And as I said, and they're just supporting me. So I got actually YR1, and I really need students because with a non-tenure track, I cannot take students. So I pushed hard to get a tenure track. It was not possible to get a tenure track in medicine. You might have 1 hour 1 and, you know, awarded and another second hour 1 along the way. I have to go out to look for positions elsewhere. then medicine made me, you know, a tenure track. But things are a lot better now in medicine, but it was difficult. I have to be honest. It was very, very difficult to the point I almost decided to leave medicine.
Yeah, no. Well, I find that incredibly inspiring because I'm at that point of I'm funded. I have a program. Can you guys give me a title that I like?
Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, nice to know that it can happen. So
you know, and
I would argue one of your points though. You mentioned luck multiple times, and I don't think that when your name comes up in conversations, anyone says, you know, Inga's just really lucky that she's able to get all of this funding. I think what comes up is that you're really, really good at this.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. I you know, I'm not someone with high confidence in myself. So I just really, you know, especially when I mentor female students, because sometimes I feel like we have a lower confidence. We are better than we think we are. And this is advice I want to give to many of female scientists. You know, you are really great. You know, should be confident in yourself. So I will try to learn from, you know, a journey and a pain forward to encourage all the wonderful female scientists, you know, to believe yourselves. But yeah, I think it's just a strong and a supportive community that we all working together to support and inspire the next generation scientist, for me particularly, for female scientists, you know, sure. Want to support them.
We have had the pleasure, I mean, of on this podcast, but then also just in general, talking to this next generation, especially of female scientists, and they are incredible, right? I mean, if you look at specific to proteomics, I mean, yeah, it's I'm glad that it's not lacking. Right. And I think you still obviously need that support just because they're amazing doesn't mean that you can't just walk away. But the groundwork that has happened, you know, I think was it in US HUPO's talk last year where Kathy Costello showed her, like, I got that name wrong. I've got her badge that was like female. Were you there? What was it? It said like first female faculty or something ridiculous, like at Johns Hopkins. Do you know the story that I'm talking about? And just that progression that we've had, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, several of my role models, one includes as Carol Robinson. So her story really inspired me. She, of course, you know, is a mother of three children, and she took an 8-year break before she came back to academia. I think that she has also one of the interviews, she said she is first female faculty. Mm-hmm. I think either Oxford or Cambridge at that time. I was just, you know, incredible things have changed along. So my mission, or, you know, I want to advocate for women scientists, especially mother scientists, because it takes time to take care of children. I think there are many, many talented young women scientists give up academic career for children. And I hope the institutions, you know, would really take this into consideration, is that like a female scientist has the responsibility and the obligation to, you know, for the, you know, nursing, right? You know, children, taking care of children. So to allow them come back to academia after they finish their family duty.
Yeah. Now the system, I mean, I think we probably could have like a whole other show about like why the system's not made for that and how messed up it is.
Yeah.
But having people like you, again, I think the leaders, and then this, it's propagating, right? It's growing that generation. So fingers crossed, we can get our act together. And
oh, absolutely. We could do another show to talk about that. But definitely a supportive community will be crucial for the young generation, especially women and mother scientists.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, we have another section here, and it almost feels like it doesn't fit as much because you're so inspiring.
No, thank you.
We know a lot of scientists are in the lab all the time, but everyone seems to have interesting things that when they're not in the lab. What do you do when you're not in the lab?
Oh, I have a lot of hobbies. I like gardening. You know, I like flowers. So I used to grow lots of flowers in my garden. Yeah, I enjoy gardening my, you know, I mean, usually in the summer, I spend at least an hour or sometimes, you know, a day in my garden. So, and I really enjoy listening to the music. I like cooking. So I think I'm a good cook. I cook for my family. So I enjoy cooking. So, of course, I enjoy time with my family, my two sons. My older one just finished his first year in a freshman in UC Berkeley. So he came home just this week and very proud of him. My second son is now in high school. You know, he's the second year in high school, we call it like. So he's going to go to college soon. So I very much enjoy my time with my children.
You mentioned gardening. I mean, so are you in Madison? I assume you have some sort of a greenhouse or a hothouse, but do you also, this is my favorite thing. Are you doing like active plant swaps with people? You know, where you're like, oh, I've got 10 of these things I made cuttings of and they bring you 10 random things. Do you like what level of gardener are we talking?
Oh, I grow some seeds.
Yeah, I grow from seeds. Do you seed swaps then? Do you have a community? Yeah.
What's that?
Is there like this other gardening community that we're going to find out? Like you like run like the Madison?
No. I don't. I just said it's my own hobby. So okay. I grow those flowers easy to grow. So,
all right.
And Ben, I don't think it's so far north that she has to use a hothouse.
It's like the frozen tundra up there, right? Like anywhere above Maryland. It's just frozen.
I'm
from the Southeast. We joke about the North.
It's really nice there in the summer.
Yeah. So I usually grow lots of flowers so I can bring those flowers to my office. So we usually have flowers all summer. You know Madison, right? We got a 6 months of winter. So
I know no Madison. But wait, this is actually kind of a good lead in because I know we spent a lot of, again, your story is amazing. You know, Chicago. I'm just going to go to the next part that we've been talking about. So Chicago, US Hupo, March the 3rd. Have you ever, which it will be cold, but have you been to Chicago? Do you know Chicago?
Oh, a lot.
Okay.
When we first came to Madison, I had been in Madison for 18 years, actually. So we first came to Madison, you know, there's not much like Asian kind of a community. I mean, like Asian supermarkets. So we went to Chicago a lot. Usually weekend trip to just go to the Chinatown in Chicago and get a nice meal there. And things have changed a lot. Now, Madison, we have a lot more Asian people and we have 4 supermarkets. And of course, you know, my kids love to go. When we have kids, we always go to Chicago for fun, you know, for the museum. So we go to Chicago very, very often. I mean, it's about like 2.5 hour, 3 hour drive. And there's a bus from Madison to Chicago. So a lot of students fly out of Chicago. So they took bus to Chicago, which is very low cost, like $30 or something. Yeah. So I look forward to have a Hupo in Chicago, a US Hupo in Chicago. You know, I kind of co-organized the US Hupo 2020. So it feels like a long time, 2021, with, you know, Yiming Zhao, Alexei Nefsisky, and also Stephanie, you know, my good friend, Stephanie Colognio, that originally was supposed to be in Chicago in the Drake Hotel. But because of the pandemic, so we end up doing the virtual, you know, version. So I'm excited to finally have the opportunity to be in Chicago. And thanks for the invitation from Peter Nemes and Ling Jun Li. I think where were you in there, right?
We weren't the organ. No, that was last year. We're like on the side, right?
Right.
But now and by the way, I mean, the virtual one was great, but yeah, no, to get back to Chicago, to go to the Drake, we're really excited. So.
Right. No, I think all the organizers are doing a great job. I'm very excited to finally had the opportunity to have a US Hupo in Chicago.
I know I was going to see your talk anyway, but I'm really, really excited.
Right. And, you know, there's great researchers in Chicago, as I mentioned, Yiming Zhao. And, of course, Neil Kelleher is my academic big brother.
we've heard the name, of time or two.
Yeah, that's also an interesting story. You know, well, I took over Neil's project. When I started the project, it was difficult because that time he already left. I met Neil when he was a postdoc in Harvard, and he came back to collect some mass spectra. He's, of course, you know, very smart, awesome. And yeah, Neil provided a lot of support to my career, as well as my other academic brothers. I said, you know, Joe Liu, you know, Rahman, Zubair Heave, of course, Michael Gross from WashU. Mike is one of the early McLefty family members, and he was, so he always called his Alpha and I'm Omega because I'm towards the very end of the McLefty family member, you know, academic children, and he's like very early. We have a great academic family with Fred, and Fred is doing, you know, every year during the reunion when he can do ASMS, not US, of course. So we kept a very close relationship among our McLefty family, you know, members.
Wow. It's like a who's who, too. It's
ridiculous. No, it's ridiculous.
You know, I cannot name all of them. There are a lot of great.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we can't thank you enough for taking time for here.
Absolutely.
And this is just such a great, inspiring story. I think, you know, our job is to help convince people to come to US HUPO. And I think that this podcast will, it's certainly not going to hurt. It's going to help drive
interest. Thank you.
So,
I think US HUPO is a warm community, right? I mean, it's the president has done a great job. Eliana Christine, my good friend, I think she has done a great job. Of course, Jenny Van Nyck, Bridget, you know, we just voted for the next president. We'll see whether it will be John Yoon.
That John guy?
Who else? Was it the one? The other one?
Sorry, I got distracted. We were making jokes about John online. So it's not that I don't know the other person. I just know that we were making really funny jokes about John. We're like, are you sure you're qualified? Like, do you know what proteomics is?
I honestly wish John will be the next president. John is. Right? Wow. Like him. He'll do really well.
Yeah.
It couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
Okay.
He did not get elected, so cut down this.
January 6th, right? I think that's voting.
Yeah.
So
that's
go right. Vote. That's a good one. We can tell people. Please
that's right.
go
vote.
Because I may also be on the ballot, but we're not going to talk about it. But yeah. Yeah, no, go vote if you're US HUPO, because there's all sorts of members.
Yeah, I say US HUPO is such a warm community. And biology students especially love US HUPO. I have two biology, my name is biology student Timothy Abalo. He loved US HUPO. He do great research in cardiac regeneration using proteomics technologies. I think my another biology student, Kalina Reese, and you know, she's going to be there. He's just going to talk about the proteomics for stem cell and cardiovascular research there too. So I have so many students that, you know, I'm very proud of them. I cannot name them all here. Just a lot of friends. I like to name them, but I just really enjoy. I enjoy to be in such a warm community of proteomics.
That's great. Well, thank you again for taking time. Us and can't wait to do you.
Yeah, go to conferences. There you get together with your old friends, but also a great opportunity to get to know new friends, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I guess at this part, I will read the credits. So first off, the views that we express are solely ours and not our employers or US HUPO. US HUPO for sponsoring this series, The Road to Chicago theme song, Johannes. Kaylee Kirkwood, again, who did the artwork for the podcast. You can do reviews on wherever you get podcasts, and they're pretty funny. So please do that. Also subscribe. And if you register for US HUPO, tell them the Bens sent you. Maybe they'll let us keep doing it. And that's all. So yeah, again, thank you. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Ying.
It was a wonderful opportunity. Thank you.